Katie Fishill, and this is Reel 4. The brothers, when you saw them in 46 and 47, did you have any sense of how their camp experience had affected their sense of being Jewish? You know,
well, it immediately came up because I was completely naive and I didn't understand what was going on. So not with George really, but with Honza, immediately we locked horns, I remember. And he got very upset by these discussions. And I then accepted the fact that it wasn't his, you know, if we can talk about fault even, it wasn't really him, but it was his father who had so programmed them in this so actually distorted their view of what was acceptable and what wasn't, that I felt really always afterwards I have a bad conscience. And it goes on with this thing, you know, because I can't really swallow it. I said to him, you know, the fact that you feel like this, you know, my parents are dead, everybody I liked is dead, there is no excuse to feel the way you feel. But then it's a stupid thing to say because that's what he does feel, you know.
Yes, he seems very influenced by his father.
Yes, I think the father was a very powerful personality. And he obviously believed that he could jettison everything that had gone before. And, well, some people get away with it and some don't. He unfortunately didn't. But,
and you were saying about these pictures he did, Honza did in 46.
Yes.
Yet I don't think he went into the art profession, did he?
Well, he went to Paris after they ran away, and I think he showed the drawings to, I think, Matisse or someone, and who told him, you know, he should be a painter, which immediately made him study law. And when they got to America, I once asked, I think, in those days, why don't you do what you are so good at? But then we all thought he was so clever he would make a great success as a lawyer. And he threw in the towel immediately after he got his first degree. He got so sidetracked, Jirka says, by details. He didn't persevere, because Genevieve found it terribly to get back to France. And that's what happened.
Were you aware of their plans to escape Czechoslovakia when the coup was, was occurring?
No, not really.
Did you yourself realize in 47 that things might change in Czechoslovakia, that it would go communist?
Well, you know, that is an interesting thing because of my connection. I'm unconnected with those two. When we got to Prague, that was just before the coup, and we had a connection who became, I think, the second in command or something of that chap whom the Czechs hanged. What was his name? Slansky.
Slansky. Mm-hmm.
And he took us to the house where the coup was planned, which was very interesting. Incidentally, we heard hardly any Czech. Which was amazing, wasn't it? It all went on in German. We weren't surprised, no. One expected it, really. When we got back, it was on the cards, I think. And, I mean, this other friend I was talking about, who had come back from Auschwitz, who had been in the Czech army afterwards, and who went to the university. I think he went to Brno University to study physics, and his wife was pregnant, and we always tried terribly hard to get them to come to England, and he wouldn't. So they stayed behind, and they were there all during the communist area until Dubček, when they came out. He became the head of a physics institute in Slovakia. One knew exactly what was going on, you know.
And the boys, you know, the fact that they'd come to England, was any advice given to them about, you know, forthcoming events, anticipated communism? Do you remember any warnings?
I have no idea. I don't think so, somehow.
When did you hear that they had got out?
I should think they must have written immediately. They went to, I think they went to Luxembourg, if I remember rightly. And they got a scholarship, you know this, I presume, to Hastings in Nebraska. There we were, you know, we corresponded very frequently. And they came, I think they came to us also at some stage. Jirka stayed for quite a while with us. I don't remember the details, to tell you the truth. But... No, there was nothing sort of exceptional, because people came out all the time, especially from here, where everybody had gone into the Czech army and returned as great heroes and immediately came out when they saw what was going on. But we thought it was a very good idea that they went to the States.
Was it important for you, you know, to have them as family,
it
having lost?
It was important because they were the only ones. And also, you know, one's heart went out to them, and others too. I mean, we are very fond of them. And I think that one had a sort of hazy idea of what went wrong and how difficult things were for them. But I knew that the marriage of Jirka's was very difficult. But I'm very fond of their older son, who is really very charming. I think the children of all these marriages, my daughter said there is something in this country for second generation survivors or something like that. Thinking about it, all the people I know, the children are damaged. You know, and I think I've done a lot of things to my own daughter which are the result of unresolved conflicts, and I've always been tremendously over anxious as far as she went, and I think this has transmitted itself from her to our grandchildren, which is a great shame. But I'm quite sure there is a connection that she... When she was born, I felt completely isolated. There was no one to ask. She was a premature child. And the only person who... I didn't know there were even things like... Nobody ever came to me from any sort of agency to... There were things going on, but I didn't know about it. I knew nothing about babies, of course, nothing at all. And to be landed with a premature child that doesn't gain. I had a friend, a New Zealand actress, who had trained as a nurse in New Zealand, who would advise me on the telephone. But that was about all, really. And I was tremendously anxious every time she had a temperature. And, you know, that's something awful would happen. Unexpected, was programmed to think that something awful would happen. That is a great disservice to do to a child.
You were saying you had her in 1950.
Right.
Yes. What was your circumstances? What were your circumstances then? Had you know you were saying about your marriage, and you were obviously very hard up in the beginning. You had no money.
Otto was very good. He rose to factory manager, and then there was a partnership between Erich Duschinski, because of the connection with him, and someone else with whom we are quite friendly. And that was a small factory, and while the boys were here the second time, I think the thing burnt down. It wasn't insured properly anyway. We were in terrible trouble then, although I don't think they knew it. And but then he said he didn't want any more partners, and he started, and it was very hard, and he built up the factory, and it was luckily, I mean, it had on and off difficulties, but it was a success. And
so how about you and your art? Because you've shown me some of your very lovely and very dramatic drawings, particularly of sort of London scenes, which are now gone, like the King Cross.
Yes.
King's Cross area.
When my daughter was about four, I suddenly decided I've got to go back to art school, because I hadn't really made use of it the first time around. And Otto was very supportive. So what happened was I had her in a nursery school in the mornings, and I went back to the Polytechnic the second time around. And that was the first time I actually enjoyed school. I was still very young. And I found two people with whom I studied. Both have died. The one who was a very wonderful teacher and a very strict academician died yesterday evening, a painter called Norman Blamey, who's a famous portrait painter, and he had come back by then from the forces. And the other one was somebody called David Smith, who taught me there, and who became a very, very close friend. And he was terribly successful in Japan, and he's just about 3 months ago, he had an exhibition there, and on his return, he had a stroke and died. And this was the last piece of work we did together, because this is an etching, and we transferred it to an etching plate. And I feel bereft now, because we worked all our lives, we worked together. He was a wonderful etcher, and he started me off doing woodcuts. And he was a very strict critic, and I think so was Blamey. Amongst the two of them, I really got a very good grounding, I think. And I had this feeling of belonging to people who were of the same kind. I mean, that is it now, because they're both dead. But,
Your choice of subject matter is interesting,
well,
isn't it?
He always asked me, David Smith, whether it was because I was so impressed when I arrived in England in Liverpool Street. And this is one of the few things which I can visualize now. When I close my eyes, I see this enormous black antediluvian station, which you couldn't recognize now. Liverpool Street is completely changed, of course. And I felt two things at the same time. What a horror this is, and how interesting. And it would be something I would really like to do. But the first few years, I mean, I really had hardly any opportunity to do any work. But once I got back to the Polytechnic, and I started to seriously draw nude and withdraw life. I never stopped, because we did it until about last year, at least once a week. So I have hundreds and hundreds of drawings, of course. I held on to those. Those are the only things I've got. Everything else is in the public domain now.
Is that because of the changes in the landscape of London and other areas? That, you know, museums and other institutions.
I presume so. But I mean, for instance, the Guildhall holds some of the woodcuts. That most of the things, the drawings are almost entirely held by the Metropolitan Archives, which is the City of London. All the others have got mostly the woodcuts. Yes, I think so, yes. But I see what happens to other people's work when they die. Yeah, you know, there's nothing more depressing than studio sales. It's a horrendous thing. So I'm very glad that my daughter won't have to deal with any work when I... There's hardly anything here except the life drawings and the figure drawings. I kept one print usually of an edition. So there's very little here. But it's interesting that I completely, I'm always asked this, I've completely belonged really to the English establishment because of my history. And my friends, most of my friends come from there. So although when I came, I should have contacted. I had lots and lots of people who were a name here, like Feigl and Bauernfreund and so on. I never made the slightest attempt because I felt too inhibited to do it. It was very silly, really. When I was 17, the Picture Post offered me to go to India to do some drawings. And I was always sad afterwards that I hadn't accepted. But then I think now, when I look at my granddaughter at 17, I wouldn't have been able to do it. It probably was right not to go.
Your drawings and your etchings and woodcuts, there's a sort of sense of devastation, isn't it?
Yes.
I wonder if that's connected in any way with your...
Well, probably subconsciously, because, you know, I hadn't actually tackled the things I felt. I felt that one has to make, you know, one has to really make a statement, which I never did. And I was always making compromises in everything, and I'm not very heroic.
What sort of statement do you think you ought to have made?
I ought to have looked at these things and put them down. I see, for instance, now, which I never had seen before, that poor Mervyn Peake did this. Probably was one of the reasons why he went mad. He was sent to Belsen to record it, I think. I always felt I ought to have done this. It's like reading my mother's letters, you know, there are certain things one can't do. But it's certainly the case that one has done damage to one's children. I mean, there are people who didn't do this. My friend I spoke about, the one who was a professor in Stuttgart, the children are totally... untouched by their parents' experiences. And Dr. Wehle in America, he lost his very much beloved first wife in Auschwitz, and his second wife, who also died recently, lost her husband, and he was killed in front of her. The Germans killed him in front of her. The children who were always told everything are wonderful. You know, there are people who manage it.
Do you think
and
telling
if
them?
You're open with your children, that is much better. And I mean, the fact that I wasn't open wasn't really my fault, because I just didn't want to inflict it on her if she didn't want it. But my granddaughter, who asks questions, is always told whatever she asks, I tell her.
Did you ever, you were saying how you felt part of the English art establishment.
Yes.
Did you ever feel that England was really home to you? You know, I was wondering about your feelings with London, Prague, say.
I don't feel at home in Czechoslovakia. I mean, I went back to my hometown, which is of a grey colour, which is unimaginable, because for 60 years or so, nothing was done to the houses. They just slowly deteriorated. The German depopulation was driven out in 45, and there's a sort of strange population now of all sorts of people, and you hear all sorts of Slovak and Gypsy, and I don't know what sort of population this is. They must have filled up the frontier parts of the Republic. But I don't feel, I mean, I see it. Everything looks shrunk. I walked from our house to my grammar school, and it always seemed to me an enormous distance as a child. It's nothing, you know. It's practically nothing. But I felt really very little when I went back, except that I was glad not to be there anymore. Prague is just very beautiful, and I always produce some watercolors of Prague every year for Christmas for my various friends who collect them. I mean, I have some very good photographs, and it stimulates me in doing this. So I must have done hundreds of those. So there is a very strong feeling for the city as such. And I went to school there, to the Steiner, that was Hugo Steiner was the name, I didn't remember, of that German professor of graphics from Hugo Steiner Prague, he was called Prague, it was his name. Occasionally you see his work, it surfaces, when you see German editions of, for instance, bought this wonderful book of Mozart's journey to Prague. I don't know, but he illustrated this. It's only come out again, so his stuff does seem to be seen again in Germany now. But I didn't feel at home there ever after the war, and I don't have any strong feelings of being at home here either. I mean, I wouldn't like to live anywhere else. But I can't say that I feel at home. I don't feel at home in this house. We've lived here for a long time. But I don't have this terrible desire to be part of something at least. I lack this. I mean, this is one of the things which my daughter holds against me, that we obviously never belonged to anything when she was little, and she felt terribly isolated, and that was very bad. It never occurred to me we should have joined something, you know, a community or something. But he doesn't like, my husband doesn't like to join anything. So we didn't really, and I didn't realize that she would miss it to such a degree. So now, you know, I don't see the need that of some sort of an identity.
So do you have any, talking of, you know, belonging, do you have any links with the Kinder Transport reunion, you know, because you've spoken about Nicholas Winton.
I didn't go to, I mean, I'm a paid up member, but I have never been to any of their functions, and he was rather put out, I think, that I hadn't. He asked me last time I saw him whether I'm not in touch with any of them. So I said no, because I didn't know any of them when I came. somehow it didn't, you know, just because you came on the same transport doesn't seem to me to be a sufficient reason to be in touch. Maybe I should have done, but I didn't. But no. I mean, my friendships were always from art school, and the people who have survived, which, but it isn't a great many. If I think of the amount of people my daughters and her husband see, I think it goes into the hundreds probably.
Well, Katie, thank you very much indeed for telling me about your Holocaust experience. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to me.
And for showing me your pictures too. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.